Good afternoon. Welcome to the Rancho Marietta Community Service District Special Board Meeting, March 28th, 2022, 12:30. Item number one, call the meeting to order. Amelia?
Roll call, President Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Here.
Director Butler.
Here.
Director Merchant.
Here.
Director Pohl.
Here.
Welcome.
Thank you. Item number two, adopt the agenda. I'm going to make a motion, but my motion's going to reflect per staff. We would like to pull item number eight until legal counsel can give us a little bit more direction. So my motion is to adopt the agenda minus item number eight. Could I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Director Butler. Roll call vote. Director Mabee.
Aye.
Director Janko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Yes.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Pohl.
Yes.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number three, we'll wait and have everybody just form a line for public comments. I don't want any pushing, shoving, or fighting. Everyone's entitled to three. Not seeing any, we're going to move on to item number four, which is closed session. This is public employee performance evaluation, discipline, dismissal, release pursuant to California Governmental Code as stated. Once we're done with closed session, we'll report back and go into open session. Welcome everybody to the board meeting. Open session is starting at 2 o'clock. That's what we have. We're on to item number five, report of action from closed session. Direction was given to staff regarding closed item session number four. Item number six, receive and file reserve study prepared by Associates Reserve Incorporated. Everyone just heard Amelia. It's been in the package. It's quite an extensive document. I want to thank staff for working with them to get the updated numbers and a more realistic view of really what the totality of what we're dealing with. With that being said, I would like to make a motion to receive and file. I don't know if we need a vote on this, Amelia, but we can. That's my motion.
Nope.
We don't?
No, you just have to accept it.
I'm accepting it unless I hear otherwise from board members. Item number seven, and just for everybody else's that came in late, edification, item number eight has been removed off of the agenda. That was request of staff per legal counsel. So that takes us to item number seven, presentation of reserve analysis. I'm looking at Paula.
Yes. Thank you, President Mabee. So I'm just going to do a quick introduction on this, and then I'm going to kick it over to Michael Fritchie, the Director of Operations. One of the things that we want to make sure that we're clear on this is primarily reaffirming and resetting our funding levels for water and sewer. At this time, the administration, drainage, and security are not a priority concern for us. It's primarily the water and sewer and the infrastructure associated with the replacement reserves. One of the things that we're going to talk about is the association reserves funding recommendations versus what the district would like to recommend moving forward to reach us, get us to that 60% funding in 5 years. And so for that, I'm going to hand it over to Mike.
Thank you, Paula. Everybody hear me okay? Mm-hmm. So this December of 2021, as you know, I came on board here in August of 2021, August 30th. And in December 2021, Mr. Henning approached me about working on a new reserve analysis. I believe a reserve analysis had previously been done back in July or in August. Okay. And at that time, I believe they wanted to update the actual reserve costs, having a new person come in and take a look at it with fresh eyes. So I started doing this, and I think the one difference that you'll see between this reserve analysis and the previous reserve analysis is I spent a lot, many weeks, several weeks, with staff. Actually, we had meetings with staff, and I brought one of my staff members here, Travis Bohannon, and it was really important to sit down with staff and to learn about what are the cracks in the systems, what are some of the things that weren't on the last study, what are some of the costs that you see on a daily basis when we go to do these types of repairs. So we spent hours just pouring through the lists, and part of the, you know, the differences in the numbers will be that input that I did get from staff. Additional differences that you'll see in this reserve analysis is there were some numbers, especially with respect to water and sewer pipe, that were incredibly low. I mean, we're talking $40 to $80 a foot. And, you know, I had requested, because I am somewhat new to the area, but I've been in the industry for a long time in other states. And, you know, I requested several recent bid sheets from our district engineer to try to get a better idea about what does it really cost to replace water sewer pipe. And so some of those costs went from $40 to $80 a foot, you know, up to $275 a foot, depending on the location. And so that's going to, you know, it's a tough difference, but I feel it's a lot more realistic in today's market. Everything, as you know, is just getting crazily expensive, and costs are continuing to escalate. So, I mean, I'm not trying to paint a dire picture. What I'm trying to do is a more realistic picture. So if we're going to have a target, we have a more of a realistic target to aim towards. So we sat down with staff. We got a lot of the projects updated. We removed some projects that, you know, were no longer relevant. We also took another aim at, you know, how long does this pump really gonna last? How long is this lift station really gonna last? And, you know, four or five heads are better than one. So we got a better idea about, you know, some of the longevity. I went to visit some of these areas and take a look at some of the infrastructure. And to try, the other thing that we changed are some of the cycles. So having said that, we took all that information. Paula updated where we are with our reserve funding, our current reserve funding. And did you want to say anything about that before I move on?
No, we can talk about it when we get to that
point. Yeah, okay. So we provided that information to Association Reserves. They put it through their algorithm. They have a fancy algorithm, and it spits out some numbers and some recommendations. The recommendation that they provided was pretty sobering as far as what would need to increase the rates to meet. And they're looking at us getting to, you know, 100% funded in, I think, 25, 28 years. And that's a reasonable goal. It depends on, you know, how do you want to run your special district. Some special districts, they have some small reserves, but they do a lot of their work in the debt world. They float bonds. I mean, that's a normal thing for a municipality to do. So far, from what I understand, Rancho Marietta has not taken out debt for anything, unless I'm mistaken. So the assumption that I think the board wanted to take a look at was, what would it take for us to get to 60% funded in 5 years? The previous district that I worked for, we had a really nice reserve program. We knew we had a really large recycled water project. There were several components to it. We were looking at about $60 million. And so back in the 90s, the board started raising the rates incrementally. So by the time we got to 2020, you know, they were 50% funded for their project. And for every $1 million that you save and self-fund, you're probably saving $300,000 in interest over the life of that. So there is something to be said for self-funding. Along the way, when we had other projects that we needed to do, we were able to pay for those projects in cash and save on the interest. We were able to invest in purchasing our own solar panels and being able to provide the benefit from that. So there are some benefits from being self-funded. There's also some, I would say there's some pain involved in getting to where we are now which is 27 and 26% respectively for water and sewer, to getting to the 60% level, especially in as fast as 5 years. It's going to take some incredible investments. So if we, if the board took the association reserves option to get to 100% funding, I think it was like 25 years, give or take, you know, because of where the infrastructure needs to be replaced on the cycle, there needs to be a lot larger of an investment up front to get that reserve money up high enough to take care of that critical infrastructure. And like I said, I've been here for, you know, going on 7 months, and there are some definite cracks in the system. I mean, you have a good system, you have a nice, you know, good water supply, and you have really good employees, but there's some infrastructure that has been neglected for a long time. And to be honest, the reserve accounts have been insufficient for a long time. And so we're kind of playing catch up. And, you know, I think staff is doing a good job maintaining the infrastructure that we do have. But since I've been here, there have been several emergency pump replacements. I mean, there's some cracks in the system. And so what we were trying to do is identify what can we do to make this a stable water and sewer organization. You know, I know we do drainage security, but we, you know, the impetus, I think, for this discussion was for primarily water and sewer. So what projects do we need to do to get us to where we need to be? And, you know, I provided a report on the state of our lift stations, and, you know, that's just one of the critical pieces the sewer's got to get from here to there. We're taking a look at the water plant. What's, you know, how old are the membranes getting? You know, we have emergency repairs like that valve. You know, I consider that valve a special case, but there's probably more hidden things like that. One of the things I do appreciate is the board's desire to get to an adequate funding level for reserves, because I think that really serves the citizens well. So taking a look at the reserve, associated reserve, their recommendation has us adding $43 a month to the rates, which I just don't think, you know, most people can afford. That's too big of a hit too quickly. And the reason they're doing that is the schedule of repairs that need to occur. There's a lot of stuff that just needs to happen. And honestly, we don't have the staffing to see all those projects through, in theory. I mean, this is just all theoretical. The reality is some of these projects we're going to have to pick the most critical projects and kind of move on from there. So that's, you know, you can see they increase the rates by $43 a month year one, and then by 5 and 6 and 7, and then they level off. When you add getting to 60% in 5 years, that adds even more cost. So you're starting at, I think you would start at like $93 a month, and then slowly level up to where you get to where you level off. And yes, you get to 6% in 5 years, but at what cost? So what staff, I talked to Tom, our general manager, we discussed it with Paula, and our recommendation is if you want to shoot towards that 60%, we recommend a linearized approach where we increase water by $11 a month and sewer by $10. And, you know, that puts us definitely in the right direction, and it's somewhere in between getting to 100% in 25 years and getting to 6% in 5. It puts us in a really good position year 5 to where we can stabilize the rates after year 5 according to the schedule of what needs to be done and the money coming in. And so, are there any questions so far? I know there's got to be some questions.
Can you tell me what your, for water and sewer, what your overall estimate for capital requirements is for the next 5 years?
You add
it all up over the next five-year period. How much do you need in what you would be considering critical fixes to infrastructure?
Well, according to this chart, it's about $24 million.
For both?
Yep.
So you need $24 million in 5 years.
Well, $34 million for fully funded.
No, that's not the question.
No.
Try it again.
Yeah. I'm trying to understand, in terms of real dollars, how much money you need over the next five-year period to make these fixes that you were describing. In other words,
I haven't calculated that.
Okay, well, here's why I'm asking. Because I understand that over a five-year period, if you need X, realistically to me, we have to raise the $5 million over and above what we currently have in reserves.
Right.
Okay, so if that's the case, there's an immediacy to the money that comes either from these drastic increases in reserve contributions that affect the 218 notice and subsequently the average consumer bill, or there is the option of short-term financing, long-term financing that you could do to overcome that shortfall, and at the same time then you develop a balance between what you raise to fix the immediate problem and what you raise long-term.
You're saying
overall increases.
Can we get through the first five years?
I got to know before I can make some realistic appraisal of a 30-year period. I need to know what we need to fix in 5 years and what that costs.
Well, I feel confident that we can make it because we're starting with $8.5 million.
So you think you can?
I believe is that correct, Paula?
Yes.
You think you can get through 5 years of infrastructure additions and replacements with $8.5 million, specifically in water and sewer?
Yeah, and we're gonna. I mean, with some increase, yeah.
If I could just interject really
quickly.
Well,
I need to know what with some increase is.
Right.
I need to know that number.
I mean, you're asking, can we, if we go the $11 and $10 per month for the next five?
No, I'm not even asking that.
Okay.
I'm asking really specifically how much we need to satisfy the capital infrastructure requirements that we're going to face from now through the next 5 years.
So I have a quick calculation for you on
okay.
that.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Tom Henning has a comment. Can you hear him?
No.
So John, can you hear me now?
Not very well.
If you look at page 5 and page 7 of Michael's memo, you see the projected reserve expenses that have been designated as needing to take place in the next 5 years. And it looks like a little over $5 million for water and pretty close to $4.5 million and also about $5 million for sewer in expenditures over the next 5 years as projected in the plan. Does that answer your question?
So you need $10 million is give or take, I mean round numbers.
Correct. So we need $10 million to spend, which is probably pretty close to what all that we have. And then we need to also continue to grow the reserves.
Right. Hold on 1 second. Tom, Paula, your formula.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to note the same information that Tom was going to. I actually have a spread of all of these projects over the next 30 years. And the first 5 years for water is slightly over $5 million, and then wastewater is slightly over $3 million. So it's roughly $9 million that we're going to need. We currently do have the majority of that funding, but obviously we don't want to spend all of that funding over the next 5 years.
I'm getting there.
Right.
Okay. So is there So is there a line across this that shows that in view of that, and understanding that we're going to deplete that over the next 5 years, what is the number you're saying we need to recover so that we're in a reasonable position at the end of the 5 years after we spend all this money? Does that make sense?
To go into year six.
Right. I'm just trying to understand, okay, that what we're establishing here is we're going to be at zero in 5 years if we do nothing.
Right.
Okay, so what is it we want to do?
I would say on average we would need to collect at least $2.5 million annually in order to cover the costs, and that would keep us flat. We wouldn't gain or lose anything. That would just cover our existing capital improvement and replacement expenditures for that fiscal year.
Okay, so what is that? Is that number tying into what Michael is saying is to in the $10-$11 range? What is that number? And I don't know what we're dividing it by, if it's 2650 or if it's what the combined contribution is between residential and commercial. I'm trying to understand then. Okay, understanding. Let's start right here. Start with, okay, we're going to spend $9 million. We want to collect $9 million. What does it cost us over the next 5 year period on a per resident basis? If you do nothing more than collect what you're going to spend over the next 5 years, how much is that per ratepayer?
Are you talking about if we change nothing or if we add the $11 for water?
I'm saying that if you have, and I'm just trying to round this, okay?
Sure.
If you have $9 million and you're going to spend $9 million over 5 years, if you want to end up with $9 million, what do you have to collect? And simply dividing it by 20% a year, what does that number look like?
So 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I could tell you that with water alone, the current contribution rate plus the additional rate of $11 per month per resident would bring in approximately $890,000. So it would be significantly shy of the 1.25 that we would need just for the water fund. It would be over the course of the 5 years. Correct. Because we've smoothed it out over the first 5 years and kept it consistent instead of the fluctuation with the high front end upfront reserve contributions. We've tried to make it more palatable for the residents and make it a lot more realistic. It's something that it's a lot more affordable than the $95 increase.
It would take 4 years of $11 and $10 a month increases to get to $9 million roughly.
Okay, so in increasing the residential bill just for reserves by that, let's use $11 number, at the end of 5 years, we're exactly where we started. We're no better off from a percentage of reserves, from a reserve position.
That's 4 years.
All right, or four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're not getting anywhere. Is what, and correct me if I'm wrong, but well, I mean we're winding up, essentially where we are today.
Well, at year five, you know, you collect another $4.9 million. So, when you get to year five, you've got almost $5 million.
And you're basing that
on the recommended $11 and $10 increases.
And what are the implications of growth that you're using in that number?
Implications. Okay. So now you're talking about potential new development contributions.
Yeah.
I was asked to provide, if you see the schedule on page 5, to utilize the schedule of potential development. So year 5. We're looking at 2973 accounts from our current account level, which is probably an additional 300 homes in 5 years.
So that's, in my mind, a reasonable number. I was just wanted to make sure the number wasn't out of control. So here's where I'm trying to go here. if, you know, and you made mention of, you know, the self-funding prophecy that CSDs use to capture reserves. Interestingly, you know, I did a while back, I did that 10 district analysis, you know, and I came up with rates that were somewhat comparable, but they're not totally comparable because there's nobody else doing what we're doing. Okay, when you look at a water district, use San Juan, perfect example. What do? They do water. They don't make water out of wastewater. They don't chlorinate it and bring it to a near drinkable capacity, store it, deliver it, and dump it on a golf course. They don't maintain three reservoirs, and they don't maintain three dams. Okay, they don't do any of the things that are supplemented by the county support that every one of these water districts gets for both wastewater and stormwater. Okay, and what they're doing there is they're amortizing on stormwater, for example, over what? A million, they have a $130 million budget, okay? So, interesting when you look, go back, and somebody suggested we do this after we did this analysis, go back and look what they do for reserving, and they don't. They fund it with debt.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, most agencies
and,
do.
And so I'm wondering, are they in some respects smarter than we are? Because it looks like, in my head anyway, when you start comparing, you can use the 2014-1 bond numbers as a benchmark if you want to start playing with what these things would cost. Does it make any sense to be looking, for example, on a short-term replacement basis for doing some of that long-term debt obligation to satisfy the financial demands of the next 5 years and then spreading those over 30 years and then coming up with an intelligent program to supplement that? What you're saying you're going to do with that, and I'll make a number up, okay? If you're going to need $11 million, then maybe you're bonding out $11 million, you're amortizing it over 30 years. And then you go back and you start figuring, okay, now I've got myself covered over the next 5 years, so that at least I'm at a benchmark of zero. I've spent $11 million and I've collected $11 million. Now what else do I have to do to level that out so that at the end of the 5 years, we improve the position, we don't wind up where we are today?
Right.
And if we do it that way, or we do an analysis that shows us what that would demonstrate, does it really mean that we can improve our position and at the same time not run the rates through the roof? And I don't think we've ever done that before because, well, obviously we've been able to sustain what look like competitive rates because we really haven't done any serious reserving since 2006.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, we had a string of 10 years between 2006 and 2016 where we actually had a couple of years where the bill went down. And the bill was going down because they were looking for somebody 10 years down the road, a la this, okay, to have the come to Jesus party that's going to be required to fix this. So that's kind of where I'm going here. And I don't know how we get out of this, but I don't, you know, Paula demonstrated that you don't get out of it doing what that report says by running everybody's bill up by $40. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, you either pay now or you pay later. I mean, that's the point.
That's my opinion. Why would we want to pay interest if we don't have to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly why the five of you were elected, to decide in which way should this district operate. Now, it wouldn't be irregular for you to float a bond or pull out a loan. Everybody else is doing it. You know,
well,
maybe that's not the reason
to do it, but I'm wondering, okay, depending on, and obviously because we have no date, we get we have no debt, we get a fairly reasonable rating. So yeah, it's, well, why should we have debt? Well, what's the cost of spreading that out and easing the pain? And if it's 3% a year, okay, it's worth at least considering you know, maybe it's worth 3% a year.
It comes down to which generation pays for what. I think that's ultimately the answer. Because if it's just, you know, if you believe the costs, then it's you pay now or you pay later with a little bit more. I mean, every $1 million you borrow, it's, you know, $300,000 in interest over the life. So it's a financial decision that the board needs to make.
Well, and we would be paying for it now also.
A portion of it.
I mean, it isn't like we're going to defer it until 5 years from now, or 10, or 20, or 30, when we're all gone. We would be paying now.
Yeah, but if you had a big,
I'm not saying yes or no whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, but just to take that into consideration, yes, we would still be paying for it, and it would be perhaps a smaller amount that we can, you know, swallow or, you know, take advantage of, whatever. But it's not like we're going to pass it on to future generations. This generation's paying for it also.
And I'm not sitting here advocating it. I'm just saying that we haven't tested it in Excel to see if it works. I mean, what we're saying is, while there's no other alternative, that's not true. There are. Others.
Oh yeah, there's partial funding. There's full funding. There's always operating debt. There's like half and half. I mean, there's different.
Right.
There's a limitless number of combinations. The request I was tasked with was, you know, 6% 5 years, and the number's scary, honestly. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot to do, and we do a lot here in Rancho Murrieta. It's not like we, you know, have like an old pond over here and, you know, buying water from EID. I mean, we're doing everything ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right down to the water intake, to the recycled water at the end. We run an MS4 with our stormwater. We, you know, having to watch over development. I mean, there's a lot of things that we do here, and it's reflected in some of the costs of doing business.
I understand. Linda, did you have a comment?
Oh, that it's refreshing to hear somebody say, we have a lot that we have to take care of, and it's expensive, and we have past situations have not stepped up to the plate, basically, and we're going to have to.
Let me also be clear that, you know, some of the assumptions that are made in this study are exactly that. They're assumptions.
Right.
Especially with the underground. I don't know if you read the part about the underground pipe. I have no idea. It's like a, you know, it's like a genie, like what's underneath. So the previous study had, and I kept the same assumption, that you'd replace a certain percentage in a certain amount of time. And I mean, that's all that we have to go on. The more condition assessment that we do, if we start a condition assessment program and we move forward with that, you know, maybe some of this stuff falls off the books, or maybe some of it gets added. The more work that we do in that regard, the more we'll know. But at this point, some of this stuff is, you know, it's underground. We don't know. We assume that pipe doesn't last forever. One piece of pipe might last 10 years, and the other piece of pipe might last 100 years.
Randy, I haven't heard from you.
Two questions. The to verify my reading of this. This does not take into account any monies that we're spending on security from the taxes, which historically, if there's money left over, as I understand it, have gone into reserves.
Correct. The property tax allocation, whatever retained revenues we have left over at the end of the fiscal year, is actually allocated out across all four funds, which would be water, sewer, drainage, and security. This particular report is primarily focusing on just water and sewer.
Right. So hypothetically, if we stop taking taxes and putting it into security, these numbers could be reduced a little bit.
Minimally.
Mm-hmm. So not from $11 to $8.
No, it would probably be pennies.
$10.50 or something.
Correct.
Okay. Secondly, the what the reserve study people came up with gets us, as I recall, gets us to 60% in 13 or 14 days, I forget. And then we kind of arbitrarily said, what would it take us to get to 60% in 5 years? And you've got that here, $43 in the first year and so on. But then you go on to recommend $21 a month for 5 years, and you say that this would not get us to the 60% funded in 5 years. What would it get us?
That gets us to, I believe it gets us to close to 55.
So now,
yeah.
So essentially, we're in the ballpark.
Yeah, and the first table and is that.
To your comment about assumptions, our assumptions.
Yeah, yeah, close enough.
Is 25% yeah. plus or minus.
I would say that's
my gut.
I'd say that's probably tight.
Yeah. Okay. I understand.
And I also wanted to bring your attention that if you look at table one, that's actually the associated reserves recommendation. And I just put it out the 10 years just to see what would happen in 10 years. Then we asked them, hey, the board wants this 60% in 5 year number. And they said, well, our algorithm doesn't exactly work that way. So I'm like, okay, can you provide us with some calculations on what that would be? And it was, they added that number on top of their get to 100% 25 to get to the 6% in 5. And
they
that
worked it backwards,
and
basically.
Yes, and that number, you know, starts out at $93 for the first
right.
month, and that's obviously, you know, anybody's ever done any programming, you know, you get an answer out like, okay, that's we can't do that. So we took that same first 5 year increases, and we linearized them. So it's more table two. The recommendation is more aggressive than table one. And it's only that way because of the board's desire to see what would it be to get to 60 in five. If that's what the board wanted to do, this is probably the most painless way to get there. And the reason why it isn't exactly 60% like the other analysis that American Association Reserves put out is because of the cycle of when the projects happen. So we have the power to shift projects as needed. Unless they're actually needed, like in an emergency type of way, so we could shift projects to make that happen as needed. We have the power to do that. Some projects, you know, we might get a grant for something, and that gets easier, or we discover something horrendous, and it gets harder. So I hope that answers your question.
It did. Thank you.
I had a question, a couple questions.
Go ahead.
I compared this study to last year's study, and it looks like you bumped up the assets by about $8.5 million.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Can you tell me where the biggest is? It in the piping?
It's in the pipe.
It's in the piping.
It's in the pipe. Those per foot. I don't know if you deal with pipe in your business, Randy.
I do.
And so, would you agree that $40 to $60 a foot is probably a bit low in your assumption?
I think it's probably 30% of actual
yeah.
costs,
yeah.
and it's climbing every day as we sit here.
It's not it's not uncommon to, you know, I took actual pipe prices from recent bids, and it goes anywhere from like 100 and something a foot up to 275, depending on the size pipe.
So how deep it is. It's
yeah.
all it's all in the labor and equipment. The actual cost of the material.
Oh yeah.
The pipe is nothing.
Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I can get pipe for $20
ground.
A foot, but
yeah.
well, you've got to put it in the ground.
It's getting in the ground, and we pay prevailing wage rates. Right?
We pay prevailing wage. A lot of our pipe is underneath asphalt that needs to be restored. I mean, there's just – so that's – I would say that's the lion's share of it, Marty. Also looking at some of the potential treatment plant replacement costs that maybe weren't looked at before.
I like your idea of doing condition studies. Are we able to pay for condition studies out of reserves?
I don't think we are. I think that's an operational thing.
Mm-hmm. It would be. It would have.
We'll find out.
It would have to come from unrestricted reserves.
Okay. I think it'd be worth seeing if we could, but because it's to put that kind of money in the budget's gonna. I don't know how much you're thinking about doing, but I think it needs to be in the budget.
Yeah, they typically say, you know, if you're really doing good asset management, you're about 1% of the actual cost of the infrastructure in maintaining the database of, you know, going back and monitoring that asset for over the life of the asset. And keep in mind that condition assessment, as much as I would love for it to be like almost an instantaneous thing, it's a long, arduous. It's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you're done, you start over again. So this is a multi-year.
Yeah, but you got to start.
Yes, and we plan on starting.
Good. Can you confirm that, I talked to Paul about this, but can you confirm that the SB 170 funding's in the current balance that Associated Reserves used?
Yeah, Paul mentioned that it was.
It was? Okay.
That was my assumption.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we've included those projects within the study itself, and so we also included the dollars in the reserve amounts.
And then lastly, we talked about last year trying to do something with these unrestricted reserves. There's a bunch of money sitting out there.
Yeah, there is?
Yeah. That's not in the value that you used as the current balances in the reserve fund. And we talked about reallocating that money last year from unrestricted to restricted reserves. I think we ought to be pursuing that because it will make our system look better.
That's certainly one of the things that we wanted to address today with the reserve policy. However, the attorneys asked that they take additional time to review that. One of the things that we want to ensure is that each fund has a rate stabilization within the unrestricted fund balance amounts, and that would require 6 months of operating expenses included in that amount, and then anything above and beyond that we could certainly bring to the board to be reallocated to a specific restricted fund.
If you remember, Director Pohl, in that conversation, one of the downsides is once we move into that restricted fund, it's in that restricted fund. So some of the flexibility lays with the board on the unrestricted funds. Should we have the pump issue, the lift station issue, we can immediately do that type of funding.
You could still do it. You could still do it over some restricted.
I understand, yeah. But in that discussion, it was once we move it into sewer, and I need it in water, I can't pull it back out of sewer. That is a I'm not saying it's a negative, but that's a limitation that we just have to work through. And as we work through that, I agree with you, our numbers looked at her. I think as we process these numbers, we've got to look at the reserves in totality and do we have that flexibility, pick a percentage to be able to move into a restricted fund. What does that look like for an immediate issue if there's a shortfall in this period? And so, Michael, you made a So I don't know if that answers.
It does, but my preference would be to get it into the restricted reserve so that we can count on it being there later on, as opposed to it's unrestricted. We could spend it on some thing that might not meet my priority.
What's the magnitude of it? If the unrestricted was put into restricted, would we go from 27% funded to what?
I think it would have minimal impact at this point. Just taking a look at what a 6 month expenditure would be. Right now, I believe in water, the unrestricted fund balance is a little over $1 million. So we would keep three quarters of that and then the remainder would go into whichever restricted account that the board would assign it to. I think one of the things that we need to take into consideration with these unrestricted fund balances is that we can use that for both operating expenditures and capital expenditures. And so we want to be able to have that flexibility in case we go over budget. If there's a year, take into consideration this current fiscal year with the rising inflation and the increasing costs, I can, you know, speak to having a conversation with Travis a couple weeks ago about the cost of chemicals has tripled, almost quadrupled. And that's just in this current year. We hadn't anticipated those additional expenditures. And so this is where the unrestricted fund balance comes into play. We have that flexibility to offset a deficit within the fund with those unrestricted funds. But once we restrict them, then they can only be used for capital replacement or capital improvement projects.
Martin, I don't disagree. I think we could probably pick a percent. And you were just talking about it. And if we need to move that over, mm-hmm. and we keep it at that threshold, then we can make those decisions mm-hmm. from that standpoint.
I have one more.
Sure.
This study was prefaced by the fact that we're not talking about drainage, but drainage is really underfunded.
Yes.
And I think we ought to work toward figuring out a way to fund reserves and drainage, assess a fee in our bills for it.
Well, we have to do the same thing with drainage that we just did with security. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have any mm-hmm. options to.
No, what if it's not a tax?
Well, that was my next point. And the legal requirements have allowed us to move away from using drainage as strictly under the guidelines of Prop 13 and 218 and the tax. You can wipe out the tax, and you could, even if you want to look at what potentially you could do with unrestricted reserves, you could compensate for the non-tax by using that money to do the same thing. I mean, and it's probably costing us, I mean, just dealing with the drainage we're constrained by the fact that we can only raise 2% a year, mm-hmm. just no different than it was with security. And if we have the option to look at relieving that tax and turning that into some other form of capitalization, it probably makes sense. And at least we wouldn't be dealing with it, even on the 218 notice, the way we deal with it now every single year. The other part of it is understand that, and I understand what we're doing when we're talking about water and sewer here. I mean, let's make no bones about it. We got a huge solid waste increase coming. Mm-hmm. It's huge, okay? And it's nothing we can control. And even when I looked at the comparable rates, for example, the county has posted out now for 5 years, and you know we're still. Very well positioned in the solid waste contract that we have, but that's only because everybody in the solid waste business is raising their rates by the same amount because they have no other option.
Right.
We're handling a whole different product.
We don't have our own landfill, and
the state is mandating what we do. We have no control over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then we're looking at the potential of what we're going to do with security. And it could contribute to an addition to the bill. And granted, one of the advantages of doing it that way is that ultimately maybe our $500,000 property tax allocation will go where it really ought to go, which is into reserves, which ultimately will improve the reserve position. But on an interim, when you're talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 year incremental increases, understand you're talking about a really, really large bill
mm-hmm.
that's not completely the problem of water and sewer.
Michael, when you were talking about what's needed in the 5 year time frame, you mentioned staffing and then a priority list. So a lot of what we would either want to do or have to be able to do as you said, we're limited to just purely a staffing issue for the day-to-day operations. And so that doesn't mean we shouldn't get the funding. Reality is, until it becomes an emergency, right, then we're throwing the resources away from the day-to-day operations. So I don't know, and to me, to the rest of the board members, I get why we took a look at the five-year. Now reality is, with some of the questions that are asked, how realistic is 5 years, even if we got all the funding, would we be able to get the projects?
Yeah, and you know, to answer your question, I think I alluded to it earlier, I'm basically the project manager for all these projects. And so, you know, typically as a private engineer, I'd probably have maybe 3 or 4 projects that I'd be managing at a time. So, you know, you take that, take the 3 or 4 that maybe we do in a year. You know, not big ones. These would be smaller ones here. But they'd be, you know, taking my time, definitely. You add development on top of that. You add managing staff, and then just the day-to-day. And then you add, like, hey, let's improve the system, and let's put in CMMS for maintenance. Let's make improvements. There's the honest truth is there probably isn't enough bandwidth for me to just run more than 3 or 4 projects at a time, really, and do it, you know, do a decent job. I'd rather, you know, run 2 projects very well than run 5 horribly. Honestly, you know, our money is precious, and so that's the truth. And so, you know, we try to prioritize. And right now, honestly, I think we're doing this. You know, we're reacting to things. We're replacing pumps. You know, Main Lift North, for instance, lost its pump. I'm like, okay. Oh, luckily we had a pump there. And now we're thinking about things like, okay, let's take the pump that we just got out and let's get it rebuilt and have it ready for the next one. Let's try to get ahead of the curve a little bit. And we will eventually, you know, primarily because we have good staff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. We don't have the horsepower to get all that stuff done. This is more of a theoretical, how much money do we need for projects? So some of that stuff's going to get pushed out.
There was a mention of grants. And benefited from, not a grant, but from a contribution.
We can hear.
I'm sorry. I said we benefited recently from a...
I'm talking to your mic.
Oh. We benefited recently from a contribution through the Assemblyman Ken Cooley, and that was great because that was $1,300,000, and that's going to help us take care of 3 different projects, one of them related. But how we go about getting some more of those would be a really great idea from my perspective. And I don't know what that entails, but it's something to think about.
Yeah, there's a couple of projects that's on Tom's radar for that. One is the water meter.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, having the automated water meter and pressure sensors tied in GIS. And then, you know, we're going to ask for a little bit more for those 3 projects, see if we can get it.
Good. There are funds out there, and we just have to find them.
Grant funds are much harder to get than they were in the 70s and 80s, but you can still get them.
Okay.
And those weren't grants that we got from.
No, those.
Yeah, it's appropriate.
It was a state allocation.
Those were not grants.
Yeah, allocation. Yeah. I'd say, let me correct that, free money is harder to get.
Free money is harder
right.
to get.
And
free to us.
A lot of times with the grant funding, there's a lot of strings attached, and a lot of the requirements make it more difficult and almost not worth getting the funding because you spend more administrative time and energy and having to hire outside consultants and contractors and a lot of just to meet the requirements of the grant. So a lot of times it's just not worth it.
And there's a point of relevance it's worth mentioning at least once, that if we're comparing ourselves to others as utility to utility, okay, we run a $7.5 million budget, $2 million of it is the securities. budget. $1.9 million. Okay. So, you know, it's 5.5 million to run three separate entities, water, sewer, and drainage. And when you do some comparative analysis, and I maybe we do a bad job of explaining this. You know, they have at San Juan, for example, okay, they have 195,000 customers, okay, and they have 71 employees, okay. That's because they stick a pump in the ground, and then they process it, and then they give it to people. They don't do recycled water. They don't do storm water. They don't do any of these things that we're required to do. We're running a small city here out of a cracker box. Okay, so, you know, I think that there's some contextual things that we have to explain on why our bill what it is. And you there are no comps on security because there are no CSDs on the planet doing what we do. There's a couple places where they stick a guy in a box at the front gate, and there are a couple places where they hire a guy to drive around in a car. But nobody even approaches what we're doing here unless they have a police force.
And we also don't benefit from economy of scale.
Yeah, so and there is no tough. We don't have. When they want to raise money in stormwater, okay, if they want $1 million, they charge everybody a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean that's the position that we're in, and I'm actually somewhat surprised that Rancho Mirada doesn't have any debt. So that's something to be somewhat proud of.
And some of that consequentially could be from the very fact that we have underfunded our reserves for so long, and now we're finally facing up to it.
There's probably been some infrastructure that's been mined, yeah.
And it was, you know, the original $30 million in infrastructure was pretty well developer funded. Okay, as we graduated out of the 80s into the 90s and then into the beginning of the 2000s, where we started to see the seeds of development again, that didn't happen in those years when Consano and Camillus were here, it started to become a different ball game. But you know, what was the old WTP1 was developer created.
We also got some good deals, like the OE3 digging out Calero. Yeah,
when it came time to build the $14 million water plant, it wasn't free. Okay, yeah. So.
All right. We'll go around one more time. Martin?
I think they answered my questions.
Okay. John?
Well, we're not doing any more than receiving the study, right?
Nope.
So, I'm okay.
Dr. Butler?
Yeah.
Just confirming again my understanding. If we decide to do one of these funding charts, we as a board only have the ability to lock it in for 1 year. This is not to say that the next board is going to come in and they would have to approve next year's.
This is correct.
Increases.
Right.
Yes. So you could not do an ordinance for a 5 year.
We do it annually.
Okay. I'm just curious because I've done ordinances that expand in years.
Ours is limited to the fiscal cycle. That's why direction was given to staff on board policy, because the outdated 2012 policy, I think it was, didn't give direction. So to where Randy's point is, once that policy comes back to us, we move on it. That then gives direction to boards moving in the future. And assigns fiscal responsibility in the future. Should they choose not to, then they either have to go against district policy or modify the district policy, and we go through that public process that government should do. So, Randy, anything else?
No, that answered my question.
Yes, sir.
Could you come up? Would it be a bother to come to?
I was just going to ask if he was going to take any input from the public.
Oh. Yeah, I haven't got there. General Manager Tom Henney, any thoughts, comments?
You know, if you can't hear me, let me know. But I think that Paula and Michael have done a good job. I think Michael spent more time working with staff and doing an assessment of what's been going on over the past years and how on thin ice we are with some of our lift stations. And excuse me, and that De La Cruz broken valve was a real eye-opener. And I think that the work that Paul has done with the numbers and it is very critical to the future of Rancho Marietta. And I asked Amelia to put some of the charts up there that predict development. And, you know, we're a few interest points away from having development come to a complete stop again if we don't, you know, if history proves itself and repeats. So Rancho Mariettans are very fortunate to live in an enclosed system that is very special. But as time goes on, it also gets more expensive. And, you know, Michael and I talked about the debt issue earlier today. The CFD1 is debt that the Rancho Mariettans took on back in the mid-80s, I believe. It was finally paid off, and there was actually a little bit left over, which contributed to the water treatment plant. But other than that, I don't think the district has ever taken on debt, and I'm not advocating that right now. I'm not also advocating for you guys agree to these numbers. I just want you to know we're providing you as good of information as we can put together and as truthful as we can make it. And this is the fact of the matter is there's quite a few of those valves in the ground that we got that we had at De La Cruz, and we don't know how deep they all are, but we're going to find out. And I don't want to put ourselves in a position where we have to go out for emergency funding in the next couple years, because we are going to spend down our reserves if we don't keep adding to them, they'll go negative at some point, and then we really have to borrow money. But I think the dialogue is very useful, and hopefully we can give direction to Paula as to what numbers you guys want to put into the Prop 218 notice as just these two numbers is what we're looking for, because we have to come back on Wednesday and publish a budget that has to go to public scrutiny for the next 45 days. And these are about the last two numbers we're waiting for. And thank you again, Board, for taking the time on this, you know, in the middle of the week, a second and a third board meeting this month. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Tom. Now I'm going to open it up to the public before I go back to the board.
Whoops.
Oh, careful.
Yeah, it could poke an eye out.
I'll put it there.
Will you state your name for my...
Yeah, Ted Hart, 825.
Hi, Ted.
Really appreciate all the detail that you've gone into with this. As I was listening to all of it, I was kind of waiting for someone to talk about the overall picture of the rate increase that the ratepayers will be looking at collectively. And John brought it forward. And if we took water and sewer at $21 a month, the waste management, I don't know what it might be. I just put down $15 a month.
That's close.
Security is at 25. That's $61 a month for the rate payer. And I look at it and say, okay, whatever decision you make on any one of these is collectively the same to the rate payer. The rate payer, as evidenced by how many people have been this, is probably, in my opinion, only interested in one thing: how much a month is this going to cost me for all of this? Because it's all right now on the horizon. And so I would only suggest to you that whatever you decide collectively as all three entities, because it adds up to the same thing for the ratepayer. One last thing, John had made a comment of looking for comps. There are definite comps in security. That's, thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Hart. Okay, board.
Oh, wait.
We have another.
Oh, come on up. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. My name is Steve Booth. I'm a homeowner and ratepayer up on Camino del Lago. Just a few things to share with you. As Mr. Hart just said, bottom line for most people is, what's it going to cost me? And I think more importantly behind that is, why am I being asked to pay more? And so a few thoughts that I have to share in your consideration. It was mentioned earlier, there's $9 million available to cover the cost for the projects for the next 5 years. As a ratepayer, not used to coming here, I'm wondering, how can that then be called a 0% reserve? Wondering what percentage of operating and or capital cost does that represent, and why is maintaining that amount for future costs not sufficient? Why do we have to look at a 30-year plan and much larger amount? Again, I think the average person is going to ask those questions. Want to know what the 60% target represents? Is it 60% of the replacement cost of the total system, or 60% of the projected cost for a specific period of time? It's not clear from what I heard in the discussions today, and I was paying very careful attention. I think any increase in reserves needs to be tied to specifically identified capital improvements with specific completion timelines, and not just unrestricted reserves with unspecified dates. The gentleman here says, I got stuff that's going to sit around. Even if we collect the money, maybe can't do it. That will not resonate with the residents and the ratepayers. Just to put money in a pot that's not tied to some specific completion date. Research says Government Financial Officers Association recommends 16% reserve for local jurisdictions. The State Department of Education recommends the same 16% reserve for local school districts. I need an explanation as to why that 16%, basically 2 months of operating costs, is not sufficient for CSD. Real easy information to find. School districts have capital improvement requirements, so do other special districts and other local jurisdictions. Just want to remind this group, I'm old enough to remember actually when it occurred, large unrestricted reserves in local jurisdictions is exactly what led to the passage of Prop 13 in 1978 in this state. And so the idea of collecting large reserves with long projected dates for utilization, again, I do not think is well advised. I do not think it would be responsible. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your comments.
Thank you.
Not seeing any others. So do we want to give direction to Paula and Michael to rework numbers, to put a different timetable in place, stay with what staff recommendation is from that standpoint? I don't know if I should back up. First of all, great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can obviously tell the time on task to get us to this level. I know there are a couple of board members that have been asking for quite a while to get to this level, and it's taken a lot, so for that, thank you. I don't know if there's anything that changes the timetables or direction for what the board talked about last fiscal cycle moving forward through this fiscal cycle. So I don't know if anything changes from what we heard today.
I'd recommend we go forward with what they recommended.
Okay. So Paula,
does he need a motion?
No. I'm go ahead.
I see this water and sewer, but I don't know how we do this without drainage and security if we're going to plan a budget. So that's one thing. The other thing is that I don't think that development has been clearly explained what that does for us, and versus what it costs et cetera. And I don't know that you have that information or that we can get that information, but I think both of those things are still going to be a part of the budget, even though we haven't talked about them in terms of reserves. So that's my comment.
Didn't you make an assumption about development as far as reserve revenue?
We did. We did include the, I believe it's 300 additional homes across the
first 5 years.
Okay. The first 5 years.
Yeah.
One of the things that we need to make the distinction is that the reserve contributions through the rate payers are entirely different than the development impact fees that we collect through the development process. So it's a separate fee collected when new water meters are purchased, the properties are built, and then that goes specifically towards capital improvement projects, which are capacity, so it increases capacity. Right now, what we're referring to with the reserve contributions that are in the rate payers' bills are for replacement of existing infrastructure. And so that's primarily where all of our maintenance and repairs and replacement costs are associated with.
So that doesn't have anything to do with when somebody develops property that there are costs incurred by us as well as?
Correct. They are two separate things.
I also wanted to clarify that, you know, what's listed as a recommendation in memo is a recommendation if the board wanted to get to the 6% in 5 years. We would recommend that you take that path versus the other path. You know what? We don't exactly have a recommendation for how much you should put in reserve, or, you know, it's more like here's the numbers, here's how we would recommend moving forward if you wanted to get to where you wanted to get to in 5 years. But I think we do need to increase reserves. I'm just saying that recommendation is, if the board wants that 60% comfort level, that's how you would get there in a more painless fashion.
No, understand. So the sewer and, excuse me, security will be addressed.
Drainage
will be addressed through the 2% increase. And so we'll have that conversation Wednesday.
Yes.
And know what those numbers look like to be added in. And again, at 2%, it's minimal. But again, as a resident within the district, all these numbers hit each board member as it is. So it's not like we're a governmental agency that is just passing something down to the taxpayer at no expense to ourselves. We're actually
living.
Yeah. So at this point, not hearing or seeing any, I think we're fine as a board getting the specific information. And again, it's been a monumental task to get to this level. So thank you. With that, I think what we do is take some of the numbers that you have here, and maybe we look at what does 60% look like in the 7 to 10 year range, and at least give the board some different numbers. Nothing says we're stuck to, we're committed to that 5. I'll speak for myself. I'm committed to that 60% just because of the sophistication of if something goes wrong, it's going to go way wrong. Mm-hmm. It's not a building. It's an infrastructure that we have to replace. So that 60% is a critical threshold. Now, how we get there and in the process of getting there, I think we picked 5 years because we knew it was bad. I don't think we knew it was this bad, quite honestly. So, and then, Paula, I guess a question I would have, and it's just, what is the standard out there for having a percentage of unrestricted funds? Where should we be? Should it be sitting at a 5%? We've heard the 6 month. Type of number, and if that's something that we need to codify in the, and I can't remember if it was in the proposed proposal or not, but kind of give us some guidance in that direction, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because it addresses the one resident's concern that we're going to have a unrestricted reserve that's going to outpace or is larger than the reserve, and that's not the intent of this board. This board's intent is to get the funds where the funds need to be so that we can keep the infrastructure from having emergency repairs from that standpoint.
Certainly.
And I just don't know off the top of my head if there's anything out there.
And I can certainly speak to that 16% from GFOA. That's typically what municipalities are funded for with their reserves. Having had some experience with that over the years, it's typically on the lower end. And the reason why GFOA recommends a minimum of 16% is because that includes the six-month rate stabilization, depending on budgets, depending on how large the municipality is and what type of infrastructure they are. Not every municipality has the type of operation that we have here with the level of infrastructure that we contain and a lot of the effort and operational costs that we have. So 16% is the minimum. Unfortunately, it puts a lot of municipalities and school systems in debt, mm-hmm. and that's why we see a lot of tax measures for additional school debts. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of other rate increases over the years through the Prop 218 notices because they don't have enough, and there's a lot of debt obligations. I can speak specifically to the city of Stockton that went into bankruptcy. They had a lot of debt obligations because they kept their reserve contributions at a minimum of, I believe it was 12 to 15%, plus additional pension liabilities. But as well, that is their recommendation, but it is a minimum because they understand that not all agencies are the same.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Do you have enough direction to move forward for the board meeting on Wednesday?
I think I do have a question regarding the 70-year range. Because we are going to be discussing Prop 218 on Wednesday, what would the direction be? Is this 7 to 10-year number? Is this the number that you would like to move forward with as far as the reserve contributions for the Prop 218 notice? Or?
No, I think unless I hear different... the board's still committed to the 5.
To the 5? Okay, so we're going to move forward with the 11 and the 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless
nope.
No, I'm in total agreement.
Okay.
I just want to see what is that options and then what's realistic from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we'll know, and I think Mr. Hart mentioned it and threw a number out that was pretty close to mine, 61 a month. For the base, including everything. So, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Staff doesn't have any more of us. I think we're good.
I'd just like to, thank the board for looking at what's a tough thing to look at. You're the board. You're the generation that did it. So thanks for taking the extra effort.
Well, again, at the end of the day, it hasn't been done. I can't explain why it hasn't. We're here. We're not going to stay here. We are going to move forward. It's our community. We've got to put the resources, in this case, it's funds, back into the community at the end of the day. And it's either we do it in a small, painful way for several years, or it could be a very painful way in the future. Any closing comments, directors? Director Cole.
Oh, yeah, I'd just like to reiterate, I think Steph did a great job on this reserve study. I'm real pleased to see they went into it in more depth than last time. And I hope we can keep doing this every year.
Director Merchant.
Yeah, I agree with that comment. We started adamantly asking for this in 2016, and between the systems and the accounting and the personnel shifts and the changes completely in management, when I got here in 2016, I'm looking for somebody other than once you get out in the field, I'm looking for somebody who was here when I got here. Okay, so we finally did get the data, and the data is what it is. So with add up the numbers on Wednesday and see what it looks like.
Thank you. Director Butler.
I just want to reiterate that and thank you both for, or all of you, for doing what needed to be done. And what needed to be done a long time ago, but here we are, as people have said. So we'll go from here. We'll do the best thing we can do.
Thank you. Director Jenko?
Yeah, I did all of that. It's been left to us to make the hard decisions that we're left with, and kudos to staff on the great work that's been put into this.
Thank you, Randy. Staff, thank you. Again, as always, staff at all levels, I appreciate everybody's time. With that, I'm going to make a motion for adjournment. Can I have a second, please?
I'll second.
Oh, damn it.
Thank you, Director Butler. Roll call vote, President Mabee.
Aye.
Director Jenko.
Aye.
Director Butler.
Yes.
Director Merchant.
Yes.
Director Cole.
Aye.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Amelia.